Welcome to today's edition of Feet to the Fire, where we're always challenging the status quo. For more cutting-edge commentary, go to feettothefire.org. That is feet, the number two, thefire.org. And now your host.
That's cool. What else? She's charitable. Do you see that? I love that, man. I could cry. Look at that. Verse 20. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. She is not withholding. She is selfless. It is the opposite of stereotypical vanity. What do they teach women now? They don't teach nurture. They teach dress to impress, dress to get the eyes. You got to get the house that looks exactly the way you want it so everybody's impressed, and you got the perfect American dream house. You got to hang with the right people. You got the right shoes, the right pocketbook, whatever. I'm not a girl, but like all that stuff. And this lady is not at all worried about how people see her. She is worried about what she sees for others, what she's doing for others, what their needs are. She is consumed, not with her fill-in-the-blank fashion designer purse. She is consumed with why this person doesn't have food and what I can do to feed them. Man, don't you see that is so like God? This woman is so much like Christ. That is so good. Priority is the well-being of her family, especially their physical well-being. Let's prick a little bit more, okay? Okay, before you get married, think about this stuff. Talk about it if you're engaged. Answer these questions. Here we go. Who's making dinner anyway in this house? And who's putting the kids to bed? And what time? Is that actually a debate nowadays? You need to have an answer. You need to have an answer. Who's making dinner? I'm speechless because I don't want to say it, but I mean, the text says she feeds her family, right? Who's putting them to bed? Who puts the linens on the bed? That's so degrading. No, it's not. It's her function. It's beautiful. It's beautiful because I can't be to my kids what Tammy is. I could never be that. She fulfills the other half of what they need. Isn't that good? So I hope it's not offensive, but yeah, the mom's putting the food out and clothing them and determining what time and all that stuff, organizing the house. Answer these questions in your heart and in your mind. Prepare for it, men and women, and have this stuff worked out. Because I'll tell you, with our culture, you'll get married and be like, where's dinner? And then it's like, what did you just say? I'm not speaking from experience, by the way. I'm just saying there's things you work out. My wife is lovely and has always cooked for us and for me, and that's a blessing. I'm just saying there's little tiny details you got to work out because you're putting two sinners together. And one of the things, because of the way our culture functions, is nobody has any clue who's doing what. And I'll tell you, it's really weird, man. I know I'm going to get in trouble. I can't believe I'm posting this online. I have to, like, edit it and get thrown out of everything I'm involved with. So many men that I work with, even. So many men, I'm not exaggerating, tell me how they're like the cooking in the house. You know, they're the cook. And I know immediately our reaction is, liberty in Christ, I can be the cook. That's fine. The guy can cook, I guess. That's not my point. I'm saying, what are the biblical roles and who's fulfilling them? And all you see nowadays is like, I just hear it at work. Like, all the guys are like, I'm the cook in the house. I'm like, cool. This is hard to talk about because it's like, there's no hard and fast command. But here's the point I'm trying to make. The identification of the biblical woman in this passage, you can't get away from. She is the homemaker, right? Does anybody see something different? That's what I see in the text. And that's cool, and that's good, and love that, cherish that. Okay, did I skip you, Jesse?
No, I had my hand up, and then I was just like,
sorry. Did I ever go back when I interrupted you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. Cool.
You had talked about People Magazine and like not worried about the latest clothing and stuff like that. But I'm posing a question.
Yeah.
In verse 22, her clothing is fine linen and purple. Purple, like I'm a documentary freak, and so there is like there was only one place where you could find purple, and it was like all the way on the other side of the Mediterranean. So, like, that was really expensive to get. So, like, should You were talking about not concerned with, like, yeah, the latest thing. So I'm just trying to figure
out. No, that's a great question. She obviously...
What verse 22 is saying there.
No, it's a great question, Jesse. She obviously dresses well and dresses her kids well. My point is there's two things to extrapolate from the passage even with that. She's obviously not vain. She's doing right by her family by dressing them appropriately for the culture. So, you know, any mom would want to do that. That's reputable, to dress your children appropriately and properly, not send them out looking, you know, weird or ostracized from society. But she's obviously not vain. And what I meant about, like, the People magazine, all that stuff, is in the context of the character of righteousness, she's not involved with worldliness. So if she's aware of what is appropriate to dress her kids in, even, dare we say, fashionable, that's not wrong, and I don't think that's what the passage is saying to avoid. What it's saying to avoid is worldliness. So she's not involved. You don't have to read a gossip mag to know what is appropriate clothing and things like that. So even though she has a good sense of the culture, she can manage her home and family within the culture, she's separate from it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good question. Go ahead.
I can read MacArthur's study notes. I don't know if this will help you or not. These silk and purple garments are expensive evidences of the blessings returned to her by God's grace.
Yeah. So there's definitely an awareness and a relevancy in terms of her position in the culture. I mean, this is a wise and reputable lady in the town, in the society. But she's obviously living a holy, set-apart lifestyle. Good question, though. Let's wrap up a couple more of these thoughts. We'll move to our next passage. Let's see. I already said well-respected by the community. She's productive. She's a manager. She's knowledgeable. She is not whiny and complaining in the house. She's not. She's industrious. She's loved. She's adored. And she's praised. And she receives riches and reward for her faithfulness. She commands praise from others by her noteworthy deeds. People can't help but praise her. You know, it's like, you know that when someone with gravitas walks into the room, sorry to use that word, it's kind of corny, but when someone walks in like that, that's her when she walks in a room. That's great. Yeah.
There were two things explicitly spoken about in the text that just strike me. Number one is, and you talked about it before, and that's, she's hospitable.
Yeah.
Because so often, men and women in our culture, it's very, that rugged individualism of Western culture, like, I mean, you do your thing, I'm going to do my thing, and if I feel like having you over, no, it's like, anyone's welcome. Come on over, you know? And that's something that, to me, is so attractive, because it's like, there's that selflessness.
Yeah, she's a conduit of grace.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying. Like, the grace of Christ is coming through her, reaching out and inviting people into her home and her sphere of influence.
And then the second thing that is in verse 12, that she's respectful to her husband. Because I think one thing that a lot of people see in our culture these days is women try to usurp husband's authority by kind of, you'll hear him in public, well, he's stupid. Or, you know, my husband did this, and what an idiot. It's just like, that's completely not the example given in Scripture of what a godly woman is.
Yeah, that drives me nuts. And guys do the same thing if they complain about their wives. That is no part of a biblical marriage. There's mutual respect constantly. Go ahead, last comment here, and then we're going to move on. A couple thoughts.
One thing that stands out is the story of Abigail when David met her. And, like, your husband doesn't even have to be a Christian for you to fulfill this role.
Yeah.
And the need to show God and to be that biblical woman.
Yeah.
That's how she showed it.
Absolutely.
Like, her character, she provided.
Yeah.
Provided for David's men. And she made sure no harm fell upon her husband.
Yeah.
Did she have to do it because her husband was a jerk? No. But she was fulfilling that role.
Obligation before the Lord. Yeah, absolutely. Good point. She's a great example. So let me ask this question now to get even more uncomfortable, if we haven't already. Where is the career here? In this passage. Now, I'm not opening a debate on work or not. Obviously, you guys know my wife works part-time. So I'm not opening a debate on that. But, and obviously this lady is doing some sort of labor and work. She's very industrious. But the priority in the passage is what? A career or the home? The home. You can't argue with the text. The priority is the home. The priority is child rearing. The priority is the husband. The point is that has been lost in our culture. Women have been taught that that is not their priority. Even with my wife, her priority is the home. And of the part-time work that she does, some of that time is front work at home, which is essentially, in many respects, what this woman's doing here. She's laboring at home. So, but the priority for the woman, her ministry, is the children and the family. Let me read some comments in case you think this is a little crazy, from Tyndale, commentary on Titus that I thought were relevant. This was on Titus 2, which we'll read, but we didn't get to yet. The Apostle Paul in Titus 2 is underscoring what he has stated in principle, that a young married woman's sphere is the home. But he also says this, it seems hardly necessary, this is in a Titus passage we'll get to, but he says, it seems hardly necessary for Christian women to be trained in loving their own children. Why would they need training in that? But again, the exhortation may pinpoint some special weakness in the Cretan character, because Titus was written to a pastor on the island of Crete. It would have a particular significance in view of the home-disturbing tactics of the false teachers mentioned in chapter 1. But now, here's what I want you to hear. Even our modern age is not without instances of professing Christian women lacking true maternal affection. For women who put their careers before the welfare of their own children are displaying a significant symptom of this weakness. He's making the point that the priority for the woman is not the career, it's the children. Now, if that even may bring about conviction and may bring some women to say, I actually want to make it my ambition just to be a stay-at-home mom and give up my career, or give up my career for a time, or make radical changes in my life so that I am shooting for this goal. Like, if you want to get married and have kids, ladies, love you to death, but whether you're studying to be an astronaut or a lawyer or whatever, if you want to get married and have kids, you can't be all of that career at that point and all of this woman all at once. You can't do it. You have to either give up the marriage and kids thing or lose your kids in the process, or sacrifice the career, because your obligation, once you have these little ones, is them. And the guy can't do it the way the mom does. The guy's the provider, the woman's the nurturer. So you gotta pray about that, especially if you're planning on being a wife and a mom, praying about how God is preparing your heart to lay aside the ambition that the feminist movement is teaching you and have godly ambition for the family. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying, obviously, that I'm not getting into the work debate. I told you my wife has a job. And once the kids are in school and blah, 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 there's different convictions, how much the wife works at that point, nobody's home. I'm not getting into that. I'm just saying the priority, if you want to have a family, is your family, not the career. Yeah, go ahead, Helen.
I think it's an important distinction to make in, since everyone's single here, that as women, it doesn't necessarily mean, like, tying in a previous study that we had where we see Paul saying that, like, it'd be better to not marry. Like, maybe marriage isn't in our lifetime. And maybe that's not where God wants us to be used. So to stop pursuing a life of singleness because you have these, like, fantasized dreams of marriage isn't necessarily productive either.
No, I would agree.
So, to not idolize your career, knowing that if God puts you in a place where you're going to get married and you're going to have a family, you're going to need to let go of at least a portion of that, possibly the whole. So, like, but not to just, like, be stagnant waiting for a husband and not doing anything. You know?
No, I couldn't have said it better, Helen. That's right. And if anybody walks away saying, oh, he's counseling to drop out of college and quit your job or your career, that's not what I'm saying at all, okay? I've told you before, my wife has more degree status than me, and I'm jealous. Okay, she went to a better college undergraduate than me, and I'm jealous. And I love every bit of her credentials, and it's great. And that was the time and her circumstances. And 1 Corinthians 7 says, don't change the circumstances that you're in. Just go with what you're in. And it's great if you are in college and studying, and you have a career and a job, and you're becoming an astronaut. Awesome. Minister of the gospel all the way to outer space. What I'm saying is, if Christ calls you to motherhood and to being the ministry of a wife, That's what you've got to be. And your priorities may have to change. And I think Helen said that exactly right. So please don't misunderstand me. But our main calling has to be what God has determined it to be, especially if we're in a marriage and a family. Good. Let me just wrap up with some couple thoughts. We got to get to our next topic. There's so many good stuff here. All right. I need to make a comment where I think even Christians get some of this wrong. We hinted at it, but I don't want to really like nail it and squeeze it and kind of manipulate it and mess around with it. So like we really plastered into our heads, okay? Like just get this in like real thick. All right. Nothing, listen, about this woman is weak. Nothing about this woman is needy. Nothing about this woman is dependent. Nothing about this woman, listen, please, is high maintenance. She's not freaking out about her hair. She is not whiny. Nothing about this woman is worldly. She's not concerned with trivial things and passing pleasures. This woman has said, I am done with trivial passing pleasures. Nothing is unhinged emotional fretfulness. She laughs at the future. Nothing here is immature. What we see is strength, listen, strength and function. Character and productivity. Strength and function. Confidence and competence. Steady endurance and productive labor. Character and deeds. Notice, I want you to notice, there is a willful dependence and respect toward her husband. A willful, she's exerting her will in dependence on her husband. Respect because of her role and function in marriage, and because of God's high calling. Now keep that in your head. But it's not because of personal weakness and personal neediness or being personally pitiful. Did you catch that sentence the way I said that? I'm trying to say this. She's exerting her will to exercise dependence on her husband and respect toward her husband because she knows that's her calling. Not because she's actually, personally, weak, needy, dependent, and pitiful. Did you catch that? She's very strong. She's very competent. She is the opposite of pitiful. She commands her environment, but she is dependent out of a willful obedience. Isn't that awesome? This woman is good. She can manage everything around her. But she says, out of respect for God, I will subordinate myself to my husband. She's not pitiful. She's not emotionally erratic and irregular. She is not rudderless. She's not all over the map. She is not, I'm sorry, guys, I'm getting awkward, okay? I love you. That's why I share these things with you. She is not blaming her biological schedule. There is no excuses for her. She's not demanding. Not demanding things. She's not demanding attention. She's not demanding stuff. She's not demanding comforts. She's not even demanding affirmation. She's getting it, but she's not demanding it. She's getting it just because who she is. She is not, listen, she is not ineffective. She is not a burden. I already said she's not whiny. She's not always blaming her husband for failures. Well, he's just a terrible leader. So what? This woman is rock solid because her rudder is Christ, regardless of what her husband does, because he's a sinner too. She is not complaining. Please listen. Ready? Focus in. Ready? Here we go. Ready? Focus in the center of the room and listen. She is not complaining that her husband is not meeting her quote-unquote felt needs. I hate that expression. What are felt needs? I don't know. What are those biblical? She's not complaining that her husband isn't meeting her felt needs. She knows what the commands of scriptures are, and she's abiding in it and living that kind of life. She's not worried about this psychobabble we get and invades marriages and corrupts them and ruins them. I left my husband because he didn't meet my felt needs. What in the world are your felt needs? Because I can read you God's commandments. And divorcing your husband is not one of them, regardless of whether or not he fills your felt needs or he's competent. You see what the culture does to our view of marriage? She is obligated to God's commandments and is not worried about the psychological implications of this or that. She has a single focus on Christ. Guys, I've seen this stuff come to life in the church. If you think I'm just making this up, marriage is falling apart. Why? Why did you leave him? Because he didn't treat me right or love me right. Now, that's terrible if that's true. That's horrible. But that's not a biblical reason for divorce. Your obligation's to Christ ultimately, not the guy. It is the guy, but ultimately it's Christ, and then the guy because of Christ. This woman, listen to this, she has subdued her flesh 1 Corinthians 9, 26-27, right? One of my favorite verses in the Bible. I beat my body and make it my slave so that I will not be disqualified for the prize, right? That paraphrase that passage. But this, we always think of that like, I don't know, it's wrong for me. Like a macho man, like, subdue the flesh, man, fight, finish the race like a warrior. That's this woman, just like Paul, making her flesh her slave and abiding in Christ. She's subduing her flesh, and then check this out, she's subduing the earth. You ever think of that? When Adam was given the command to subdue the earth, to go till and make food and hunt and gather for his family, the woman also is subduing the earth in her making of the food, in her making of the clothes, in her cleaning the laundry, and all that. She is fulfilling her function and role to subdue the earth the way Adam had to as well. That is so inspiring. This is a steady, zealous, potent servant of Christ with the gospel call to serve God and others as her mission. All right, I want you to think of this example as this fly irritates me. I want you to think frontier woman, sorry for the stereotypes, frontier woman versus urban metropolitan socialite. Oh, you coughed right at the key moment there. Sorry, that's all right. Just kidding. All right, I'll say it again. The frontier woman versus urban metropolitan socialite. The former, the frontier woman, is praiseworthy and demands respect. She's like dirty, like, I don't know. That was terrible. My mind is running. We just lost people. My mind is running before it. All right, I've got to edit this recording. What I mean is when the carriage breaks down and the cart breaks, she's out there. She's competent. She's the frontier woman. She's gritty. Her hands are dirty. She's involved with life and getting the job done. And the latter, the urban socialite, is self-indulgent, vain, shallow, worldly, deadweight, burden, ball and chain on a man and his ministry. Because all she cares about is her hair and looks and what the culture says is worthy as a woman, but nothing about the Bible. You see the distinction? And I'm not picking on somebody if they live in the city. I'm trying to draw an analogy with an illustration. The Proverbs 31 woman, this is what Aaron said at the beginning, is very, I'm trying to say this with care, because I don't want to teach you women to be independent. That's kind of a bad word in the culture. But she's independently feminine. What I mean by that is this. She is competent and strong in her womanhood, and yet she's fulfilling her role of dependency in the context of a biblical marriage. Does that make sense? She's independently feminine. She's competent and strong in her role as a woman, in her womanhood, and yet she's fulfilling the role of dependency in the context of a biblical marriage. I just can't think of it any better than a five-star general and his closest commanding officer. Both equally valuable. Different function.
With a dirty frontier woman, it's interesting because the one thing, like the beginning part of Song of Solomon, it talks about how the bride is like kind of freaking out because he's like, hey, what's up? She's like, dude, I'm like in the sun all day, I'm tan.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, she's like, do not gaze at me because I'm dark, because the sun has looked upon me. Her brothers were angry with me and put her in the vineyard and stuff like that. And she's like, I'm not really worthy to look upon. I'm not, you know. Solomon's like, no, you're a beautiful young woman. And I don't know if he was thinking about, this is King Lemuel, so probably not.
Right.
But it's kind of the same, you know.
Interesting parallel to draw. Yeah, absolutely. And before the pendulum goes and people are like, Serge taught that we can't look nice and go out to dinner. You guys, please don't let the pendulum swing. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm trying to fight the culture. They tell you that you are valued by the purse on your shoulder and the amount of makeup on your face and how expensive it is. And that is not how you are valued before God. You are valued based on the character of devotion to Christ and industry in your role. And that is what is so meaningful.
Can I interject?
Yeah, let me just finish these thoughts and then take it. She's there to support the husband, not to drag him down and add another burden to the man's life. You know, I need all new furniture. I need all new furniture and new clothes. Serge, that's still stereotypical. I'm not trying to be stereotypical. I'm just trying to give you an illustration. That kind of thinking and obsession with the world and with vanity, that's a burden to a guy who wants to serve Christ. You know what's not a burden? I don't care what couch we have and how old it is and what's in my wardrobe. Who's coming over for dinner tonight that we're ministering to? You know, right? That's the illustration I'm trying to convey. Men, I always say this, you need to man up, right? Women, You need to women up. You need to women up and be this kind of woman. Proverbs 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. True statement speaking from experience. We have further details of the function in the house in Titus chapter 2 in the New Testament, which we'll look at in 1 second. Go ahead, Tam.
No, you said it for me. I was just going to say, not only is that stuff not what you're valued by, but Serge just made the point that when you're focusing on that, you're just kind of adding a burden to your husband of another need that's not a biblical need. Again, doesn't mean that you can't look nice or you can't ever decorate your house, obviously, but you know, when it becomes a need of yours that's not really a need, it's detracting from your chief end, which is to glorify the Lord and, you know, within the home to supplement your husband's ministry. And yeah, you already said it better than I could.
Well said, honey. And by the way, guys, when we talk as a group, we're in a cultural context. So when we bring application out, I'm addressing the issues of the culture, which is a very vain, self-absorbed, physically obsessed, appearance-oriented culture, okay? If we had a culture that was just pervaded with constant humbled ugliness, then I guess we would talk about a different application of the text. Like, that was kind of a joke. Nobody laughed. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if the culture was obsessed with, like, everybody was morose and dressing poorly, and like, then maybe we would do a lesson on, hey, ladies, this lady dressed nice, good. The culture is obsessed with appearance. And my point is, this lady, that is, vanity is the furthest thing from mind. Does that make sense? I think we got it. Good. I saw a couple hands. I thought there was a new hand, though, that is. So, okay, Jacob, go ahead.
I was going to say one thing you talked about that's really vital, and it's a passage most people don't go to when it comes to biblical womanhood, is 1 Corinthians 11, where Paul talks about a relationship between a man and a woman is parallel to the relationship between Christ and God the Father.
Mm.
That God and Christ, God the Father and Jesus Christ are equal with one another. Yet it says that Jesus has humbled himself willingly to the Father's will. And you would never say that, oh, Jesus is less than God the Father. No, they are equal with one another. But Jesus has a very special, very unique role where he has humbled himself to the Father's will and he allowed himself to go to the cross and become a servant, like Philippians 2 says. And in the same way, men and women are equal. 1 Peter says they're joint heirs with Jesus Christ. But a woman has responsibility to humble herself to her husband's authority that is God-given, according to Ephesians.
Right.
And in so doing, it's true where he says in 1 Corinthians 11, however, in the Lord, neither is woman independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as a woman originates from the man, so also the woman has his birth through the woman, and all things originate from God. So we have to remember when we're talking about biblical womanhood that being in a marital relationship, subservient, being respectful to your husband is biblical in the same way that Christ submitting himself and being respectful to the Father's will to go to Calvary did not make him any less than the Father.
Right. We don't look at Christ and say he's been denigrated.
Right.
We know he was humbled, but he is retains the same value and essence, and it's the same way with, it's a good example, the same way with women.
And in Philippians 2, it says that Christ will be, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord of the Lord.
He's exalted.
And I can't remember where it is that Paul says that in the same way that if a woman fulfills her responsibility, that's how she shall be honored through child rearing.
Yeah, we're going to get to that.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, no, she's elevated. She's lifted up by fulfilling this role. Totally. Flip over to Titus, guys. Yeah, well, flip over to Titus. It's in the New Testament, small little pastoral epistle. Go ahead.
I'll just jump on it because I'm the woman, so I can say this. And I know Jacob was trying to be kind, and he's like, well, I don't want to say subservient, you know, respectful. But I can say subservient.
All right, thanks.
It says that Abraham, hello, I was going to really...
Oh, First Peter, we're going to get there.
Sarah was obedient to Abraham. Like, yeah, you're supposed to be obedient to your husband. And as much as... Case in point, like, you as a guy don't even want to say it in our culture, but if you don't like the whole being subservient or obedient to your husband, if you're going to fight that, and it is a fight against your flesh a lot, but the husband's going to be responsible before the Lord someday for how he leads you, but women, we're going to be responsible, we're going to stand before the Lord someday, and he's going to go, how did you submit to your husband? How did you fulfill that role as a woman? And even though it's completely counterintuitive and countercultural to our flesh to submit to somebody, we can't deny the fact that we're going to stand before the Lord someday and he's going to ask you how you did. He knows how you did. But you're going to have to give an account to that. And it's going to be a lot worse standing before him someday than it is training your flesh to be submissive now.
Well said, honey. Well said. Titus chapter 2. That's a good wife. That slides right into the chair halfway after the study already started. Comes right in and just boom. Explains it all. Supports her husband. All right, Titus chapter 2. Look down to verse 3 and 4. I want New Testament teaching that the wife is the homemaker. I can't argue with the text. Chapter 2, verse 3. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their who?
Husbands
and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind and to be subject to their husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. In light of that, I would suggest that feminists have robbed women of their greatest glory by teaching them that there is no glory to be found at home. The glory of womanhood is to be found at home, because that's what the calling Christ gave you. That is a good thing. All right. That was function. Let's talk about character. You guys with me? You guys with me? What? You're tired? Already?